if you want to turn there. My purpose in drawing your attention to small things, I just wrecked that mic. Apologies, Emma. My purpose in drawing your attention to small things is not so that you might limit what God's doing or that you might become complacent about the reality of it, but that you might be full of faith about what God might do with the limitations you have, in spite of the limitations, irrelevant of the circumstance. In John chapter 6, there is a well-known account. It says this from verse 1. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. That is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than a half a year's work." Disciples Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up and said, "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. Jesus has retreated. That's the reality of it. He's gone to get away from the crowd, and they've chased him down. And he's sitting down, staring at this group of people approaching him. And he turns to Philip and asks, "Where are we going to buy enough bread for these people to eat? Where are we going to buy bread for these people?" I want you to note the nature of that question. Jesus doesn't ask, "How are we going to feed these people?" Where are we going to buy bread? Where are we going to buy bread? It's easy sometimes to get caught up in rebuking Philip for his lack of faith. He should have said, "You're the Messiah. You can do all things." Philip is a man of faith. When he gets saved, John 1:45, he says to his friends, "This is the one." When he encounters Jesus, he says, "We have found the one whom Moses wrote about in the law and the prophets spoke of." He's confident about who Jesus is. But he's asked a question by Jesus. Where will we buy bread? Where will we buy bread? And Jesus already has a plan in mind that doesn't involve purchasing bread at all. He's asking Philip, where are we going to buy bread? And Jesus has no intention of buying bread at all. He's already got a plan, and he's not going down the shop. There's 5,000 people hurtling towards them. They're sat on a hill, and they can see all these crowds gathering. Where are we going to buy bread? And I wonder, why did he ask such a leading question? Why did he ask such a leading question? Why did he not say, "How will we feed these people?" I mean, to be honest with you, if I was Philip, I would have been like, why are we buying them bread? They've made their own journey here. We didn't invite them to come. They've hunted us down. Why are we buying them bread? And Philip doesn't consider that. He recognizes the ridiculous nature of the prospect. Well, it doesn't matter where you want to buy bread. If we could find a place that would supply enough bread, it's still going to cost a ridiculous amount just to let them bite a small piece of it. We're not feeding them. We're giving them a mouthful. It's going to cost half a year's wages to give them a communion-sized portion of bread. But Jesus is highlighting the impossibility of the circumstance. He's actually drawing attention to it. He could have got on and just done the miracle. He already knew what he was going to do. He's already aware of what his plan is. He could have just got on, gone, listen, kid, give us your food. These people are hungry. But he has this interaction with Philip where he's actually highlighting the difficulty and the challenge of the circumstance, the lack of resource they have to be able to provide for these people, the lack of ability they have to be able to fill their needs, give them everything they want and satisfy them. And so Andrew pipes up. Oh, here's a boy. He's got 5 barley loaves and 2 small. But what use is that? I would often love to see the interactions of the disciples with Jesus. Because this is, he's asked, where can we buy food? One of them's told him how much it's going to cost. And the other one's pointing out the fact that there's a kid here who's brought his own food. Does somebody want to answer his question? Like, how far will that go among so many? How far will that go among so many? It's insufficient to even begin to feed these 5,000 men, potentially there's 15,000 people there, women, children. This is not a shortage of people. We've got a good chunk of food next door. We feed people regularly. We're sending out food parcels all the time. 5,000 people turn up. We can't do anything for them. We've got a lot of food. Cupboards full of it. It doesn't begin to touch the need. And here's Andrew going, you want this packed lunch? And it's very easy to see the limitations of every circumstance. But actually, sometimes God is highlighting the limitations of circumstance to demonstrate his power. God actually is looking for glory. He's not interested in doing miracles where you might assume you did it yourself. He's looking for glory. So let me turn your attention to Judges chapter 7. A well-known account. God has spoken to Gideon, told him, I'm going to deliver Israel from the Midianites. Judges chapter 7 and verse 1. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. The Lord said to Gideon, you've got too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. Scott, they've lost two-thirds. Just like that. If you're scared, go home. Two-thirds of them left. And the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water and I'll thin them out for you. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink. 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. And the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give you the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home. Gideon has been told by God that he's going to deliver Israel from the Midianites, and he's summoned to the best if he can. Gideon's a limited man in himself. You know, he's from the weakest tribe, Manasseh, and he's the least of his family, and this is not a significant figure, but he's managed to gather up 32,000 men to fight 135,000 Midianites. It's a big ask already. It's a big ask already. I think it's 4.2 men per person. It's a lot. And God goes, listen, Gideon, you've got too many. You've got too many. You're going to fight an army of 135,000. You've got 32,000. It's too much. Sorry, what? It's too much. You've got too much. You might misconstrue the situation here and believe you did this yourselves. So he thins them out. Gideon's done his best to round up the troops, and now he's going, if you're scared, go home. There's 32,000 of them. They've got to fight 135,000 of them. The 10,000 that are left are nutters. They're not right in the head. Of course they're scared. Of course they are. Go home if you're scared. Great. We've got 10,000. We've got to fight 13 and a half men each. 13 and a half? What's half a man? But 13 and a half men. That seems like a big ask. I mean, if you're Bruce Lee or Jackie Chan, you know, maybe you've got it in you. But you need 10,000 Bruce Lees and Jackie Chans to think this was an achievable feat. They're more than 10 times your size. And God's like, let me help you get rid of some more people. Let's go down to the river and have a drink. The ones who drink like dogs, take them. ...9,700 people are sent home for how they drank. Because they didn't behave like dogs. And God goes, you got 300... ...to fight 135,000. And that'll do. That'll be sufficient. 300 to take on 135,000. That's more like my sort of maths. What? And two men sat in a church one Sunday morning. And the reality is the prospect of reaching their community was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And God went, yeah, that'll do. And one of them didn't even want to be there. He was like, let's give up. So Granville was committed. And God was like, yeah, that's sufficient. And the truth is that very often we look at the need, the challenge confronting us, the things that we would love to see happen. And we're like a little boy going, do you want my lunch? I don't really know what else to do. Sometimes we summon our best efforts and we get 32,000 men. We work really hard to gather a crowd. And then God goes, it's not actually how I'm planning on doing this thing. It's not actually how I'm planning on doing it. I don't need lots of people to fulfill my purpose. I actually want you to recognize I did this. I want you to understand this was the work of the hand of the Lord. You didn't do this because of your own effort. You didn't do this because you're great and mighty. The Lord delivered you from the hand of the Midianites. You sent 300 men who behaved like dogs out to fight. 135,000 men. I want you to recognize this was God. This was him. Philip, where are we going to buy bread? Lord, it's going to take at least half a year's wages to give them a bite. I want you to recognize I fed them. I did this. This was the work of my hand. Here's 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And apparently it just kept coming. It just kept coming. I love the phrase. Let me read it to you. John chapter 6 and verse 13. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. They gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. 5 barley loaves, the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over, filled 12 baskets. We serve an incredible God, an utterly outstanding God. But he wants the glory for what he does. And sometimes he actually puts us in limiting circumstances. He actually chooses to work through difficulty and challenge. He wants it to be supernatural. He's actually sometimes not showing up to give us everything we think we need to do the thing he's asked us to do. Sometimes he's highlighting the limitations of our circumstance to reveal his glory. Sometimes he's highlighting the limitations of our lives so that he might get glory and honor through it. He turns to Philip and he says, where are we going to buy bread? With no intention of buying bread. With no intention of it. He's already got a plan. My God already has a plan for this city. He already has a plan for your loved ones. He's already got a plan for your life. And it's very easy sometimes to be overwhelmed by the nature of what we're confronted by. There's 5,000 men charging towards us, and we've got to feed them, and we don't have what it takes. There's a city of 300,000 people out there. And there's us. And actually, sometimes that's what he purposes. But more than that, that's what he purposes. He draws your attention to it. God could have used the 32,000 men in a miraculous way to deliver them from the hand of the Midianites. But can you imagine the heart of Gideon when he says, okay, so I've got a message. Those of you who are scared, go home. And 2/3 of the people that he's worked really hard to try and gather up are off. And he's got 10,000, and you might be able to convince yourself, this. And he takes them down the river, watches them drink, and thinks, well, we could probably get rid of the ones that drink like dogs. But he watches 31,700 people go home before the fight's even begun. He watches 31,700 people go home before the fight even began. So there's us. How are you feeling, boys? Imagine if he'd made the offer then, if anybody's scared, go home. He'd have also lost the other 300. And yet in the most limited army, I mean, calling it an army is a farce, isn't it? 300 people. They walk in, win the battle, and don't really have to do that much. And a boy shows up. For whatever reason, with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, one of Jesus' most famous miracles is dependent on a child having some food and making it available. It's recorded in all of the Gospels. This miraculous feeding of the 5,000. But it was dependent on a kid going, I don't know how that outworked. I don't know if Andrew accosted him and went, listen, we're having your lunch, mate. I don't know if he went, do you want my food? But it's, this is one of those miracles everybody knows, right? Jesus fed 5,000 people. Not everyone believes it, obviously, but everyone knows it. But it was dependent on a child having some food. What do you have that you might be able to give to God? What do you have? I'm not talking about what's in your pocket, what's in your bank balance. What is it that God might supernaturally do through what you offer him? Because he doesn't need a lot. Truth is, he doesn't need anything. He's sufficient to do everything that he wants to do. This is the one who rained down bread from heaven. He didn't have to take the 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He could have asked his father to supply food. You know, the one who's commanded ravens to deliver meat to people. He doesn't have to use the boy's lunch. He doesn't have to use Gideon's army. He could just turn the hearts of the Midianites. Strike fear into them. And yet he chooses to work through limiting circumstances so that he might get glory and honor, so that he might get praise, so that he might be recognized as the one who has delivered them. He feeds 5,000 people. But demonstrates first the ridiculous nature of feeding 5,000 people in the circumstances. So that he might get glory and honor. So that he might be recognized for what he does. Your resources, the lack in your life, the challenges of the circumstance are not a debilitating factor for God. They don't hold him back or restrain him in any way. In fact, he's choosing to work in limited situations, in challenges of difficulty and hardship. When it seems there is no way, then he's wanting to, listen, let me show you. I'll make a way. I'll demonstrate my glory. I want this church to be a light in this community. I want this church to reach out and make an impact. And we don't need more people to do that. We don't need more to see revival happen in this city. We don't need more. We have everything we need to serve the purpose of God right now as he's asked us to do it. Yeah. And it's very easy to tell ourselves we don't have enough. It's very easy to convince ourselves that we are insufficient to meet the need. But I was never trying to meet the need myself anyway. I'm here to serve the one who does exceedingly, abundantly more than I can imagine. Amen. I'm here to serve the one who does far beyond my ability to comprehend. The one whose all things are subject to. Whether I give him 2 loaves and 5 loaves and 2 fishes or an army of 300 men, he's able to fully serve his purpose. But he's looking for you to give him what you have. In spite of its limitation. In spite of its lack. Small things are not in any way insignificant. And they're not a measure of significance. Entrusted in the right hands, they can feed thousands. They can undermine hundreds of thousands who come against. And I want you to grow in faith about what God might do. To believe for more through the small things. Because he wants to use them. And your resources, the lack of provision you have, the lack of time and ability you're able to give to something. Listen, I'm standing up there playing a keyboard as if I know what I'm doing. He's actually trying to use circumstances where it doesn't seem like it should work, where it doesn't seem like it should happen, so that you recognize he did it. He did it. I pray you would give him what you have. In Jesus' name.